We're going to take some reaction from members of the public via the telephone and some of you who have been writing us here on WhatsApp. This person says, I've been following the elections and the politics from Guyana for some time. What would have solved the entire issue, which was the national house-to-house registration, which was stopped by one of the political parties in the country? This registration would have solved and helped the Guyanese people and government to have a more credible and transparent election. Why was this registration process stopped and not supported by all parties and individuals in Guyana who believe that they would have had an even greater prospect of winning the election? Anyone wants to take that? Can I answer that?
Yes. Can I answer that? First of all, it isn't one political party that made the decision. This is a matter that went to court, the High Court of Guyana. And the Chief Justice ruled that the plan of GCOM to scrap the national registration database and have a completely new house-to-house registration was not acceptable, and that people who are on the voters list already on the registration list should remain there, and that there were opportunities available to GCOM to have to go on ahead with the house-to-house and or to find another form, which is the one of continuous registration and or claims and objection. It is the chairman, the newly appointed chairman, Justice Singh, in August, after following the ruling of the Chief Justice, that abandoned. It was a decision of GCOM, not any PPP that did that. And so the house-to-house was aborted and the claims and objections started. In the High Court ruling, there were also two important issues that were dealt with. Residency, in that as a Guyanese, even if you are in another region or you are not in Guyana, once your name is on the registrar's list, you have been registered, and the registration process in Guyana is in person. You have to do it in person with your documents, etc. And the person is photographed. And in the when election day comes, the folio with that person's photograph data, biodata, is in the station. So when you come to present yourself, they see your face on the form. So the issue of the claims and objection then went on. But the High Court of Guyana and the Chief Justice ruled that residency could not be an impediment for someone, and there was nothing in the law of the Constitution that prevented a Guyanese born citizen, and in fact Commonwealth citizens can vote in Guyana as well, that could be hampered by residency. And the second thing, that even a dead person could not be taken off the list unless a death certificate was produced. And so the caller has unfortunately been misinformed. The claims and objection period went forward, and the preliminary list of electors and then the official list of electors was created. At no point after that did the APNU make any big story about the return to house to house, or the list was bloated, etc. That was in the earlier period when APNU wanted the house-to-house registration. So we had a list and people went to vote. But I wanted to add in, sir, this elections, as with all the elections in Guyana from probably 1980, have had international observers. And the international observers in these elections were very straight in what they observed on March the 5th when the returning officer tried to pull out his, as I call it, the magical spreadsheet with new votes on it, that the OAS head of the electoral mission was a former prime minister of Jamaica, Bruce Golden, who before the permanent council of the OAS said, it is an extraordinary courageous mind to present fictitious numbers when such a sturdy paper trail exists. He even went on to say, and it's on the websites, everyone could see it, he had never seen a more transparent effort to alter the results of an election. This was after the attempt on March 6th to declare the elections with the APNU winning. The Commonwealth Observer Mission, the European Union, the Carter Center, the CARICOM Observer Missions all have commented on and declared that if the results of Region 4, which came out of this spreadsheet of Mr. Mingo and baptized by Lowenfield, that this was not the basis to swear in a legitimate government again. And that's going back to March the 16th. So we have known very well in the recount, it is CARICOM that is brought in as the most legitimate interlocutor to observe the recount. They put forward their report, and they said, and can I quote from it? "We are, however, of the unshakable belief that the people of Guyana expressed their will at the ballot box. And as a result, they concluded that the recount results are completely acceptable and should be used for the swearing in of the new government." This was June the 15th. What resulted after that, and then you have Prime Minister Maya Motley coming in and reasserting and asking, under what executive fiat did the chief elections have to magically disappear and disenfranchise 115,000 voters? So we are not alone in the PPP in our view that, one, we won the election, that the will of the people was to give their votes to the People's Progressive Party Civic. Secondly, that we are supported by all the observer missions. We are supported as a people by the other opposition parties. We've been supported by civil society in the view that the legitimate government in waiting is the People's Progressive Party Civic. And furthermore, that internationally, same international organizations that observe the elections have repeatedly given cautionary statements calling now, and most recently, to call on the APNU AFC to concede defeat and have transition and allow the new government, the legitimate government of Guyana, to come in. And so when we say we, it is not just the PPPC. In this case, the only people that are totally isolated and alone are the representatives of the government of Mr. Nagamutu, who is in this program. They are totally isolated, they're totally alone, in that they continue to give a narrative to try to create red herrings all over the place, to obfuscate. The main thing is that the will of the people on March 2nd gave their votes to the People's Progressive Party Civic.
Well, let's get a response from Mr. Nagamutu.
Well, David, look, Gail Teixeira and I have been in the same trench.
We were
literally alone at a period when we were talking about rigged elections in Guyana. The United States, the British, the European Union, whose side were they on until 1990 when the Carter Center came in and we had what Peter Wickham has described as changes in the electoral system? We were able to have improvements in a number of critical areas that would have facilitated free and fair and credible elections. And so when we talk now about all those who are on our side and that the APNU AFC is isolated, it's very self-serving that you could do so. Times have changed. There are new interests, for example, that are operating even within the Caribbean, a geopolitical reality, a strategic reality that Guyana has now become a petroleum state. We have announced that in November. We have started to ship our oil. We started off with a situation we were getting 0.5%, then 1% of royalty for the oil. And then when we got into government, we changed the formula and we negotiated 2%. Royalty and 50% profit oil. That must have gone down with some people with interest as taking away what they felt they were running away with under the PPP. Under the Jagdeo Ramotar regime, they give away everything, the hook, line, and sinker. So we went in there as a nationalist government and we decided to stand up in defense of the patrimony of the Guyanese people. And so we are not surprised that we have the choir coming down like a wolf pack with their armada, trying to intimidate the people of our country. Look, when Peter mentioned about the statement of poll, and Gail is saying, look, why mentioning me and so on? She's part of allegations, widespread allegations of fraud in the elections. I'm ashamed to have been identified with the PPP, to know that this is a party that stood up against electoral fraud. I wrote a book that's called Fraud, a synopsis of rigged elections in Guyana. I was all over the country fighting for electoral democracy in Guyana. It's been almost 60 years I've been in the political fight, and I fought for human rights, civil rights, and electoral democracy. It is a great struggle, and therefore it is a shame that anyone would have thought that they could pull off the type of fraud we saw. It is not the statement of poll. It is when we agreed to the recount that during the recount, the instances of fraud started to be unraveled, and there were no official documents in the ballot boxes. How do you, this is not a case where it was invented by the chief elections officer or by the government. It was in agreement by all parties that we go back into a recount. And it was the recount stage that you have to deal with, whether the results of the recount establishes that the elections were not only fair, but it was credible that the ballots that you saw there could be supported by documents and that those ballots were not cast by phantoms. Now, the question of padded lists, everywhere in the Caribbean may have padded lists, but the question is, you need to have a process to sanitize the list. And when the Elections Commission decided that let's start it over again, because in 2012, we had a situation where only 347,000 persons were considered to be 18 years and above. It beefed up to 660,000 by the time we went into the last elections, almost double the number in a vote in elections. The PPP boycotted the House registration. They boycotted that because they list to perpetuate fraud. And in my view, they try a thing, Caribbean people would say, and they got caught. They got caught in it, and that is what the recount has shown. And that is why they're denying the fact that there has been a process that observations had to be recorded. Observations had to be taken into consideration to test how it impacted on the ballots cast. That is how you have credible votes.
Well,
by matching observation with the votes cast.
It's been quite a while since I heard anything from journalist Dennis Chabral. I'll hear from him before we go and take a call as well. What's your assessment of what you've been hearing so far?
I was quite intrigued by what was being said by Mr. Shearer and Mr. Nagmutu. And this raises some questions that are lingering in the public domain. When one talks about valid votes and the credible votes, when one looks at the Representation of the People Act, some people say that it is already clearly spelled out there what constitutes a valid or a rejected vote. So then how do you marry that with what was said by the Court of Appeal and also what is stated in the order? Is it that the order now supersedes the legislation that was passed by the Parliament some time ago? And I'm not so sure whether we can rule out the impact that all of this will have on Guyana as a country within the Caribbean community. Interestingly, today's state-owned Guyana Chronicle, which the Prime Minister, of course, includes as part of his portfolio, generally speaking, as far as the media are concerned, stated categorically that Guyana will not become a colony of CARICOM. And for something like that to be said in a state-owned paper, raises a number of questions in the public domain. What will this mean, for instance, if the CCJ were to rule that, you know, we should just go ahead and declare the votes as stated there, as labeled in the documents coming out of the recount as total valid votes cast? What are we using to define validity of votes? Is it the order? Is it the Representation of the People Act? Is it the Constitution? Is the Constitution fitting the order or are they alone? And our hemispheric relations are so integrated. Yes, there may be converging interests at any given point in time. Surely Mr. Nagamuto and Mr. Shearer would recall at a time when at the end of the Cold War, when the United States had issued, I think it was a republic, the message to Guyana and said then, back then in 92, that it expected the elections to be free and fair. So there are always convergence of interests internationally. This period may or may not be one of them as far as CARICOM is concerned, but we do have some benchmarks now that we are all being measured by, and this can have a rippling effect one way or the other. It is left to be seen what will be the outcome of the ruling on this week or probably next week, and how the political players like Mr. Nagamutu and Mr. Shearer will handle this.
Prime Minister Nagamutu, we've had various panelists here allude to the potential impact of this impasse on Guyana after we get past it. And how do you see the alliance being able to lead Guyana past this if you hold on to power, if you're able to hold on to power? What are the implications of that for your leadership? I mean, there's suggestions here that at a minimum, you come across as being tainted.
David, let me tell you this. This weekend, every week I write a column in the newspaper. And this weekend, again, I concluded that while Prime Minister Mia Mottley sat with us in one of the rooms in the office of the president, and she said that the election is not a single event, it's a process. I wrote that I was at that time daydreaming, looking at the far end of the process, to see emerging a government of national unity. There's nothing else in the Guyana context where you have two large minorities of Afro-Guyanese and Indo-Guyanese, that you could have a situation of winner takes all. And that when one ethnic group is in, the other ethnic group is out. We have to learn in the world what is taking place, that the empowerment of all peoples, particularly the peoples of the Caribbean, like us, with our history and our ethnicities, that we matter, and that we have to be able to decide our own affairs in our countries and in our region that will make the world be proud of us.
So what efforts are being made towards that government of national unity?
That has to be part and parcel of the political process. That is where we see our peers, our compeers in the Caribbean, when they make pronouncements, they have to make pronouncements in favor of national reconciliation in Guyana. It isn't whether the PPP wins or APNU wins. The country still would be in a situation where I feel it's an unfortunate legacy that one half of the parliament will look at the other side and said riggers, and the other side will look at the other half and it will say thieves. And is that what the legacy we're going to be painting? Is that what I walked through all these years, 50 and more years of active politics, to fight the division, the divisiveness, the polarization, where elections become an ethnic census? I think that is part of the debate that the Caribbean has to hold. It's not a question of
You had an opportunity to change this as well as Mr. Shearer in the constitutional reform process that went nowhere.
Yes, Dennis, you know that
I... Nowhere other than...
It was a constitutional reform from 1999 to 2001.
They wanted to give up their power hold.
In the 5 years, they didn't go on a constitutional reform, which they promised the people.
I started in constitutional reform going back to 1994.
You know, Moses, it is not about your credentials. This program is about the will of the people to have their votes counted. And this entire program we're hearing about your credentials. About your credentials.
Right. Okay.
It is the people of this country. And their votes to be counted.
Moses and Mrs. Shearer, just hold on. Dennis. Just give me a second. Let me manage the process. Let me manage the process. Do we have a caller on the line? Let's take a call. Let's hear what are some of the questions that Barbadians have. Hello. And this is not confined to Barbadians alone. Please forgive me if I give the impression that only Bajans are to participate. But Guyanese and others who have an interest in what is happening in that country can participate in this edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Hello, I'm on. You are.
Right. Miss Ellis, please don't cut me. Listen to me. I am very annoyed from my home here, you know. You're there?
Yes.
Because I personally feel that things are not right now. I feel, right, yes, we have We will wish Guyana the best, but we have our issues on Barbados to deal with, and we should get on with Barbados' business and leave Guyana alone presently, you know.
Okay. Well, let me just say to you that most days, I would say to you that 99% of the time that we have on this program is devoted to things Bajan. But you know, Barbados does not live in this region alone. And you may recall that over the years, the domestic issues in Guyana have actually created an environment where many Guyanese have come to Barbados and have settled. Guyanese are all over this Caribbean community. And therefore, what is happening in one has implications for the other. Unfortunately, sometimes when we discuss these matters, we don't see those implications. And perhaps there's a need for a little bit of leadership sometimes in the media when it comes to pointing out these types of situations. So I appreciate your frustration, but I think that in those circumstances, you should listen. You should try to get a sense of what exactly are the issues in Guyana and to what extent they may have implications for us. All right? Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, morning.
Hi. Good morning, Mr. Ellis. Ms. Kachiro, she spoke, but she never talked anything about Dave. All they're talking about is about allegations. They recount order specifically state that there is supposed to be a process that they go through checking each and every ballot, check the authenticity of the ballots, check every document to make sure that the ballots are credible ballots. That was the order which was gazetted. They had to check every ballot. They then only went to just count the ballots. They went to see the credibility of everything.
So what is your concern when you look at the whole situation now? What is your concern?
No, my concern is, okay, when the PDP went and said that Mingo did what he did, they went to court, stop it, and eventually the CARICOM came and went and they specifically went and do an order specially. The recount process that we went to was not in the law. We could not go to no recount besides going to an election petition. Okay? But they went and gazetted a special order to do this recount.
So you're basically alleging that they did something that the law did not allow for? Is that basically what you're saying?
That they went and gazetted it.
No, but you're saying it's illegal, that what they did was illegal.
No, they went and make it legal by do a gazetted order.
You want to respond to that? One of the panelists respond to that to clarify it for him?
Well, it would appear as though in the ruling by the Guyana Court of Appeal that it linked their interpretation of valid votes to the order specifically for the 2020 elections. So there seems to be some sort of legal tie-in or nexus between the two. But Mr. Nagamutu is the lawyer, Mr. Sher is the politician. That's just my reading of what the order says.
Let's cut through some of the flack. I think Mr. Nagamutu has had a few chances. The fundamental issue for your caller and the other viewers, I want to say to our Caribbean brothers and sisters that the parliamentary democracies that you have experienced, that you do experience, and sometimes take for granted, is precious. Your right to vote and have your vote counted is precious. And I ask you in the Caribbean to guard it with your lives, because we in Guyana are an example to you of what happens. Are working with the sitting government to make and a government that is illegal is brought into office. That is fundamental. So I'm asking our Caribbean brothers and sisters, you may think that we're a pain and we're always getting into trouble, But the Caribbean, the democracy must be protected by all citizens in the region. Every observer mission, and most particularly the Caribbean observer mission, was here on two occasions, three actually, but two reports. And yet when they came out with their report, which the president said, Mr. Granger said, they were the legitimate interlocutors, they became scorned. CARICOM has been scorned by APNU. If you see on social media what they did to Prime Minister Maya Motley based on her forthright principal position as the head of CARICOM, they've done it to the Carter Center. They've done it to every other international and regional body that has come out and said, hold to the recount, the certified recounts, declare the results. If you don't, and you put in a legitimate government, the Guyana will face the consequences. That's the words that are used. And so the caller, I think, has been misinformed, and it's unfortunate. But the issue here is that whether the CCJ rules and however it rules, the point is that the matter will come back to the Elections Commission and to the chairman, and that the Court of Appeal did not, in anything it said, give any authority to the Chief Elections Commission to determine by himself what was a valid and was invalid vote. So there's no technicality, no loophole, no constitutional provision, no legal provision, nothing in the Court of Appeal judgment that allowed, gave Mr. Lowenfield, the Chief Elections Officer, the authority to declare what was a valid and what is an invalid vote.
Mr. Nagamoto?
He did not have that. He didn't. The Court of Appeal never ruled that.
Mr. Nagamoto, please. Yes.
The Court of Appeal never ruled that.
Yes, Mr. Nagamoto. Mr. Shearer, just give me a second, please. Just hold on, please.
25% of the voters of this country.
Yes.
And this pomposity that we see displayed here, that one of the contributors can say the caller is misinformed. And she's woefully misinformed. The basis that Dennis was trying to allude to of the recount was Order 60 of 2020. And the caller said it was gazetted. In the Guyana context, the layman believes that when something is gazetted, it is a law. I'm the chairman of the National COVID Task Force. And we gazetted the measures by which people should be safe and protect themselves. There are some that are very restrictive. There are some that are very, might be draconian to some. Many are being disobeyed by people. They face prosecution in court, et cetera, et cetera. People are driven off the street by microphones, by the police. There are some measures when you're gazetting them, they take the form of the law. So the Court of Appeal interpreted the gazetted order that has been agreed to by the president, the leader of the opposition, the chairman of the Elections Commission, and by CARICOM. Agreed to an order that says you must take a look not only at the ballots. That is why it was, someone said at a very early stage that it was not intended to be an audit. But the CARICOM said that this was not simply counting, recounting votes. This was an audit akin to a forensic audit that had been done here before by Justice Cross after the 1997 elections, conducted an audit, and they found discrepancies in the 1997 elections when Mrs. Janet Jagan was the president and she had to slice her 5-year term of office to 3 years. That is how Barrett Jagdeo became the unelected president of Guyana. We must go back to that history where we had manipulation of the process, even under a PPP government in which I served as a minister. Unfortunately, not being able to detect what had happened in that process. But let me tell you this, that this process that is locked in by Order 60 of 2020 and an amendment, it says that you will have to look at the poll books, you'll have to look at the other statutory documents, you'll have to look at the list that is used to take out the people who had voted, you'll have to look at persons who had voted, who have been registered in one area and voted in another area. They will have to swear, produce a letter of employment. You'll have to look for a person who comes into the polling station and say, I don't have an ID card, but I have a passport or I have some other form of identification, and that person has to swear to an affidavit of identity, that document should be in the polling, in the box. Why is it in the recount? Forget statement of poll now. Forget the counting that took place initially. This is what is valid. This is what is credible. A recount process where you're looking for verification of the ballots matched by authenticity. Or else someone will come in there from the graveyard, vote and go back to the graveyard.
Peter Wickham is smiling.
Why
are you smiling, Peter?
No, I'm smiling because we have a, and I don't have a difficulty with the idea to reset the gazetted order and walk it in place. Why I'm just saying is that it's fascinating that you have a whole team at GCOM of scrutineers. You have a CARICOM team watching. All of these people were not able to go through all of these technicalities. But Prime Minister Nagamuto is comfortable that two people or one person, which is the chief elections officer, unilaterally is able to come to the conclusion that all of these things really regarding 115,000 votes were done. I think he did that in the space of about 2 or 3 days. I find it fascinating that Prime Minister Nagamuto is actually buying the plausibility of this. So I don't have a difficulty with the gazetted order. I think that the caller is on the right track regarding the expectations. As I said, this really is a question of whether or not we believe that the validity is a matter that can be determined unilaterally by the chief elections officer, as distinct from the team at the GCOM that would have scrutinized the process and are satisfied with the validity of the votes that they saw in the recount. And I think that that's what it comes down to. Are we more comfortable with their opinion, or are we more comfortable with the unilateral opinion of a chief elections officer who already has some challenges regarding the truth, regarding the earlier issue, which Prime Minister Nagamuto hasn't wanted to deal with at all, because he's a gentleman, remember, that produced these two different statements of polls. And as I said, if he was able to produce his statement of polls in the first place, we won't be having this conversation now 3 months later.
You want to respond to that?
I think that we have to deal with a credibility issue, Peter. It's a question.
What's his credibility?
Yeah.
This credibility. Let's deal with his credibility.
The credibility of the ballots that have been counted in the recount. There were reports, 10 different reports.
Prime Minister, I get all of that, but the question is, whose view are you going to believe? Do you give him unilateral right to determine credibility? Or do you prefer to give it to an
election court? Just hold on a minute.
The law does not, nor does the Court of Appeal.
Mrs. Tashira, just give me a second. Mrs. Tashira, please. Let me hear Prime Minister Nagamuto.
Given that right under Article 177, that the Chairman of Elections Commission shall act only on advice of the Chief Elections Officer. You have to look at what the law states. You can't arbitrarily conclude that the elections officer acted out of prejudice or he has committed a trespass of the constitutional command. So he could be challenged in the court if what he did is not within the law. But for me to sit here, Peter, and to say, well, do I believe him?
You do.
And I can't tell you that.
Yeah, but I think with all of these figures floating around since March, since elections, we are largely left in no man's land. We had the Mingo Declaration. We had all of the declarations that were held in abeyance. Now we have the recount figures, and we have the Lowenfield figures. This is not helping the country.
Let me ask you this question, Dennis Chabral. When you listen to what people are saying on the ground in GT, as you call it, what are they saying?
Well, you know, coming back to the point that the Prime Minister made earlier about this country, is that we are polarized. But what I find now, I don't know if it is as a matter of the whole political play that people are not being mobilized at this time or whatever, I find less of a hostility on the streets of the capital and elsewhere, particularly among the rank and file ordinary coalition supporters. The protests and the gatherings have been so far small. As I said, I don't know if they're not being mobilized or instructed to turn out, but judging from past elections where people were literally out in the streets and clamoring for their party. That's the PNC or the coalition. I'm not seeing that now.
You sure COVID hasn't made a difference in that regard?
Well, COVID may have made a difference, but then there have been defiance by both PVP supporters as well as APU supporters, and on both sides, the police have locked the people. But I don't think that that is. I mean, I went into Georgetown only Saturday, and people are shopping, stores are open. You will never believe that we have a COVID problem in this country.
So well, perhaps that raises the question of whether the politics has also distracted the people from the COVID issue. What are your numbers right now in terms of confirmed cases?
Oh, more than 200 confirmed cases.
And well, I think the chairman of the National COVID, Mr. Nagamuchu, should know those figures. But can we get back to some of the issues you were talking about?
But Mr. Sharon, as I have you here, I was about to make the point before David took callers, is that I find that the political parties in this country, perhaps elsewhere, that happens. But in Guyana, where we are naturally polarized, we only talk the talk for the national community when it suits our purpose. I recall when your party, the PP, was in power, the Western nations, particularly the United States, were, as we say, Guyana, cussed down because they found that they were too interventionist in the political affairs. Now you're welcoming them. On the other hand, Mr. Nagamuchu is throwing them away because they don't talk his talk. There has to be a middle ground of rationality about what is right for the country, what is right for the individual man in the street, the woman in the street, the child at school. If we don't come to a common ground, then we'll find ourselves pulling at straws and people talk at us for their own narrow interests.
Can I answer that?
Yes, Gail Teixeira.
Thank you very much. The issue is that...
Where then Minister Priya Manichan made a very caustic statement to the U.S. ambassador, and both of you and Minister Manichan walked out of the place because it did not suit your agenda at the time.
Yeah, I think Mr. Chabral may be missing the point, and that is right now we can have a debate on all these issues, Mr. Chabral, of the future and how we deal with criticisms from others outside of our borders, and what is our role as a member of the global community. We can discuss all those things. The issue now is that we can't go further than we are. We're stuck in that the country is facing political crisis, an economic crisis, and a health crisis, which cannot be resolved either way unless the issue of the elections of March 2nd and the recount results are treated as it was agreed to and signed on by the president and the leader opposition, as well as by the constitutional laws of this country. We can't move forward to deal with the COVID issue, which is being badly handled. We can't move forward on the issues of whatever constitutional or electoral reforms are required. We can't have a budget because there's no parliament. People are suffering and the economic issues are impacting terribly on our people and on our economy. So yes, all these issues, Mr. Chabral, are absolutely critical. Absolutely. I would love to discuss these issues. But until we come to the point where the recognition is that the statements of poll stated that the PVPC won, the statements of recount as of June the 9th, when the last ballot box was counted, the PPP had 233,000 votes, 233,336 votes, and the APNU 217,920, a difference of 15,460. One would have thought that despite what the Elections Commission, Chief Elections Office has done, and the mischievousness and the offense of the Guyanese people voters and derailing democracy in this country, it is the duty of the sitting president. He has a statement of poll. He has a statement of recount. Don't worry about what is the political line. He can concede that, as Mr. Hoyt did in 1992, Mr. Hoyt said, my polling agents at my party headquarters have brought the evidence, and I therefore have to agree that the PVPC is in the majority, and thereby handed over the reins of power. And this was matter of hours from the official declaration.
But on the other
Mr.
hand,
Mr. did the same.
Mr. Teixeira,
and so it's now in Mr. Granger's court and the Election Commission to do what is right.
I have seen a comment from the General Secretary of the Alliance, the ruling party, in which he has made it clear that the president is not going to concede. Yes. Moses Nagamutu, can you expand on that?
Mrs. Teixeira wants us to have what she would have described when they attacked the American ambassador as a feral blast. Initially, she blasted the Elections Commission, that there are people in the Elections Commission who are cabal, part of the Reagan cabal. So you could throw wrong allegations cheaply, and you can throw wrong statements, that statements have been made, and it shows a particular outcome, and that the president should concede. None of those statements are official. It's not the final results. When Peter would know, you did polling in Guyana, you did popularity ratings in Guyana, and those who have come to Guyana before these elections, you would have known that if you look at the arithmetic of numbers during the campaign for the 2020 elections, you would have seen the overwhelming support of the PNU-AFC six-party coalition. At all their rallies, you would have seen the enthusiasm, you would have seen the energy, everybody spoke of that, you would have seen the numbers. So if, as Mrs. Teixeira wants us to deal with unofficial assessment, we could say easily that that would have indicated an easy win for the coalition. When I look at the ratings of the PPP in 1997, you compare the number of votes it received in 1997 elections when Mrs. Janet Jagan was a presidential candidate, and the vote it claimed to have won in 2020 based on this unofficial statement or statements, the PPP showed that it increased its percent, its number of votes by 77,000 in a small country where this government was facing a no-confidence motion, where it was, one person referred to it, I think Singh had said earlier about Guyana being a pariah in the world. We were isolated because of extrajudicial killings. Ministers had their visas revoked. They couldn't travel in many parts of the world. We had a situation of Guyana becoming a killing field. Drugs, people ran an unofficial economy and had an incestuous relationship with the ruling cabal. We had a situation where we had people leaving the country in droves, and we had a situation where the economy was not performing as it ought to have performed. So just last year, we had a growth rate of 5.3% of the economy. And we have projected that this year, with petroleum resources, it will move down from 86% to 54%. Guyana is not bankrupted. The economy is not in trouble. It's facing difficulties. And certainly, this is not a country that will depend solely on proceeds from oil. We have a green state development strategy. Agriculture is the strongest base of our economy outside of what will come in from oil. We have a policy that mixes oil with soil. And that is why we consider ourselves still to be the breadbasket of the Caribbean and bread and the green lungs of the world. So we cannot discredit our country. We'll have to examine our political system. And our political system has failed to deliver the type of governance to the Guyanese people which they deserve. I agree with all the contributors. This is about democracy. We should preserve our democracy. This is about the will of the people. We should respect the will and the sovereignty of the people. We should not do electoral engineering and try to bring numbers that did not accord with the wishes of the people. The fact that people seem to be tranquil in the street is no guarantee that this cannot overflow into an ethnic violence, an ethnic conflict. We all will be the loser. We all will then have a different version of the Dutch disease infecting our country even greater than the coronavirus. So we have to be able to put ourselves in perspective. Yes, talks must be initiated between President David Granger and the leader of the opposition with the most, for me, in my book, I speak for Moses Nagamutu. As you all know, I was not a candidate in the last election for prime ministerial position. I'm not going up
as prime minister. So I am now looking for my exit in political life after nearly 60 years. And I believe that it is important. In South Africa, I've learned the experience. Those of us who have been observing national liberation movements, people engage in warfare only to have a right to sit at the negotiating table. Guyana has an opportunity before any warfare breaks out to go to the negotiating table and to hammer out our differences and to work out in a bipartisan way, in a multi-party way, in a multi-ethnic way, a governance system that will help us. All that has happened in the past have helped. Even that we didn't have constitutional reform, that should be a priority for any new administration to consider trying to bring a situation in Guyana where you have full representation and you have participation of all the ethnicities of this country.
Prime Minister Nagamutu and other panelists, we're going to have to take a break here. But what I suggest is that this program will go down to 12:30. When we come back, I'm going to try to get as many calls as I possibly can. And after 12:30 in the 12:30 news, then we will go to the normal Brass Tacks program, because I think we would have had about 2.5 hours together in looking at this Guyana situation, which many people in the region have been looking at and wanted to get a better understanding of. Okay, so just stay with us.